Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes, a good Friday to one and all. It is Taz and the Moose with you here on CBS Sports Radio, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Mike Pete across the way. Bogus double duty this morning. He's got updates sitting in with me as Taz is out sick this morning. So the grind does come to an end for Taz. And I, for one, am happy he brought a sinus infection into CBS Sports Radio. I mean, fantastic news. As a father of three, that is great all week long. But he's on antibiotics. He's off today. Holiday weekend. It is Holy Thursday yesterday, Good Friday today. Easter Sunday coming your way if you do celebrate. But hopefully Taz does feel better by Monday morning. But under the weather once again today, as he's been all week long, and out with that sinus infection. So he is sick. So Bogus sits in with me for the next 3 hours. And I got a good show on tap. We're going to cover it all for you. Good morning, Andrew. How you doing, buddy?
Moose, good morning. I'm looking forward to Monday when Taz is back explaining how this wasn't a sick day and not a sign of weakness on his part. That's
right.
Always fun when he
exactly right. Well, the grind
argues
does,
away reality.
The grind does come to an end.
Yes.
It does come to an end.
Maybe.
Mark the date down. I mean, that's it. Put it in your calendars. That's when the grind came to an end for Taz, the former world champion. So, but a lot of things to get into here, Bogus, certainly over the course of the next 3 hours. And we kick it off with the NBA. And, you saw in that you had a triple header last night. And we'll get into all the particulars of each and every game. But certainly, let's start out in Brooklyn as the Philadelphia 76ers, without Joel Embiid, who did not play in Game 3, series knotted up at a game apiece after winning Game 2 in the stylistic fashion that they did, go into Brooklyn, and the Net fans pointed out, and having fun with Ben Simmons a little bit, that he can't shoot the basketball. And without Embiid, they win that game stylishly, 131-115, the final. As you saw, J.J. Redick have a game, Tobias Harris have a game, Jimmy Butler chipped in with 16 points, J.J. Redick chipped in, Ben Simmons led the way with 31 points, even though he cannot shoot. The Philadelphia 76ers, even without Embiid last night, put on a show in Brooklyn, and I'd be a little concerned right now if I were Kenny Atkinson about this 76er team finally starting to come together a little bit here for Brett Brown.
You put it very well. Winning stylishly last night in Brooklyn, that's exactly what they did. They came in there, they threw haymakers, their best remaining players were at their best last night, and every single time the Nets thought about really getting back into that game, somebody, usually Tobias Harris, hit a big shot to stop that push back in there. And I would be more than concerned if I'm Kenny Atkinson, because what we saw last night is what my fear was, and Mike, put your earmuffs on here for this. The Sixers are by far and away the better team in this head-to-head matchup. Great season by the Nets, bigger concerns for the Sixers moving forward deeper in the postseason. But even when you take Embiid off the floor last night, from Simmons to Butler to Harris, those are the three next best players on the floor in the series, and they're all Sixers. And then you mix in J.J. Redick knocking down five threes. It was really impressive by Philly to win that one last night. And, the Nets may end up being lucky to have only gotten that one game one in this series.
Well, you know what? I mean, listen, you could throw in D'Angelo Russell's going to make a claim in terms of being one of those guys.
Right,
that he's a really good basketball player. But I get the point. I mean, the point that, that Bogus making, basically the Philadelphia 76ers are a more talented basketball team. They have more impact players at the top end of their roster than the Brooklyn Nets do. And that's fair, and you're right. But the concern, Bogus has been about Philadelphia is, when do they come together and play as a team? Because you don't see that consistently. The one thing that you know about Brooklyn is this, is even though they might not be the most talented team in the postseason, what they are is a team, right? They play well together. They understand what they need to do in order to be successful. And there are going to be games in which they get thoroughly outplayed. And they did in Game 2, and they did last night in Game 3. But they are a team. For the Philadelphia 76ers, it's a collection of talent at times, where you know they've got difference makers, and Embiid is ultimately the best player on that team. I know Simmons can challenge it, but Simmons's issues in terms of shooting the ball from the outside. But Philadelphia, Bogus, the concern I had about Philly coming into the postseason was, you know, everything coming together and then playing consistent basketball. Now they've done it in back-to-back games. Are we going to get that now here moving forward from this Philadelphia 76er team? Has this team all of a sudden found it?
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly capable of laying a stinker Saturday afternoon, tomorrow afternoon in game four in Brooklyn and having 2-2 going back to Philly and making extra work for themselves. Obviously, it's impossible to know if they've figured something out right now, but those concerns that you just laid out to me are concerns more so in the next round. I mean, they should and they need to because you need to get through and move on as fast as possible. You don't want to play any extra games, but they should be able to take care of the Nets relatively easy in this series. And now they put themselves up 2-1 in a weirdly strategic decision with Embiid last night. And maybe it does take a game missing a piece for guys to step up. Maybe that is what puts them together and with a different kind of focus, figuring out a way to ease some of your concerns.
Here's my, if you are the Nets, though, do you poke the bear with Simmons? I mean, are you putting out, I know Brooklyn, but I mean, if you're Simmons, and we know he can't shoot the ball from the outside, right? But, I mean, the sign in terms of the missing jumper with his picture, basically, yeah, like kind of missing child, you know, is that the, if you're Brooklyn, is that the time and the fashion to be poking the bear, understanding that you are not the more talented team, or is that all in good fun?
No, I think it's in good fun. Because I certainly enjoy it. And I don't know that the sign or not ends up driving the difference in this series. You know, Jared Dudley talking smack and Simmons responding. I mean, I would hope Ben Simmons wouldn't need that to really get going and really put his imprints on this season or in the series. But no, I mean, I don't think that's why the Nets are losing. I think the Nets are losing because they're just not good enough.
No, I get that. I get that. But if you're the underdog in a series,
you got to do anything you can. And that's what you have to do. If you're like,
so maybe, anything you can is, see, I'm one where I, you know, maybe we're coming at it from a different angle, but I'm one where I look at it where I don't know if I necessarily want to continue to poke. Why would I, even if, and I agree with you, Ben Simmons should not need Dudley or a dopey sign, like a missing person sign, in order to get motivated in this series. It's the postseason, right? He's a young NBA superstar. We know how good of a player he is. But why poke the bear? What's the advantageous position of poking Ben Simmons in terms of whether it be Dudley, whether it be the sign? What's the deal with that in terms of, I would rather be a team that, you know, kind of flies under the radar and maybe try and let him, if he's going to play lethargic basketball, let him continue to play lethargic basketball.
I think the context matters and the specific. Like, I wouldn't, there are teams I wouldn't mess with. Like, I just wouldn't mess with the Spurs. They're too professional and veteran. But, I mean, the Sixers, we just talked about how they're kind, I wouldn't say that they're fragile mentally, but they're new and they can be poked and they can be bothered. So I think you've got to go do that when you're the Nets, because maybe that's where one of your advantages is. The bigger, you know, kind of question would be if we thought that Ben Simmons was responding too much to Jared Dudley and too much to the sign, as clever as it might have been. Like, they're in the position, they have the upper hand in this because of their talent advantage, because they're the better team.
Well, that is true.
They should be, you know, you don't want them to go back too far. And they certainly shouldn't be instigating this. Like, you wouldn't want Ben Simmons to be picking random fights with Jared Dudley. You don't want him responding too much either. But I think the Nets, it's got to all be on the table here because they're behind the eight ball, so to speak, and they need all the help they can get.
Well, and it's a 76er team, Bogus, that, you know, you've been following the Eastern Conference, the NBA, throughout the course of the year. I mean, it's a 76er team that's one of the four, right? When you think about the four teams that potentially get themselves to the NBA Finals, the Bucks, the Raptors, the Celtics, and the Philadelphia 76ers, you know, in you know, not order that I'm putting them in terms of opportunity to get there, but they're one of the teams that could potentially get there. The Embiid sore knee, you know, they could get past the Brooklyn Nets without Joel Embiid, but they're not going to be able to get past the next round, get to the Eastern Conference Finals without Joel Embiid. So we'll see how that knee does indeed hold up. You know, but it's a Sixer team with a tremendous amount of pressure on the head coach, because there are reports out of Philadelphia that Brett Brown in this series specifically is coaching for his job, that if they should lose to the Brooklyn Nets, that Brett Brown, and not just based on this series, but based on some other stuff that went on during the course of the regular season, that he indeed could be out as head coach down in Philadelphia. So The coach has a ton of pressure. You know, these guys, after going all in and Elton Brand as an organization, adding Jimmy Butler, adding Tobias Harris, that the organization is all in seizing an opportunity this year with their big four to try and get themselves to an NBA Finals. So it's a Sixer team that, you know, do you look at this series against the Nets as a team that's coming together? Or do you look at this series against the Nets as a team where, well, we'll find out if they're indeed coming together, if indeed they've gotten better when they face one of the big other big dogs in the Eastern Conference? This is a Net team that they should take care of.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. It's if they win this in five games and that they run the table here these last four and they go surging into round two, it starts to answer some of those questions. Not all of them. It's not a finished product because then there's the jump in competition in round two. But, you got to go step by step. And in the playoffs, to me, like, it's just important to take care of business. You got to get off the floor as soon as possible. You can't play any extra games. You can't blow leads. You got to survive. And again, you know, they kind of chose not to play and beat it by all intents and by all accounts that they were just like, let's be safe here. And then they go out there and they, you know, pseudo blow out the Nets in Brooklyn and flex all their muscles. That's a really good sign, but we need two more, at least in this series.
Well, you do, but I mean, I would think that's smart, too. I mean, because if you're the Philadelphia 76ers, I get it could come back to haunt them. It didn't last night, but it could have in Game 3 should they lose to the Brooklyn Nets. But for them, they've got to be able to manage the minutes and manage the games here for Joel Embiid because we know that he's not healthy.
Yeah, I mean, but it's a 1-1 series. You're on the road. He's out there warming up, and the season, remember, before Game 1, the series begins with Elton Brand saying, you know, he should play, but maybe he doesn't play, and we were wondering, he's out there, and yeah, you put, at least put him in uniform, show him off, make them think he's going to play, put him out there for a little bit. I mean, it's a weird time to experiment, to play it overly safe, but in the end, it pays off because the other guys stepped up and were pretty magical last night.
Well, they were. Here is Brett Brown, the 76ers coach, after that game went final, talking about Mr. Ben Simmons, who dropped in 31.
I think a lot was just him. You know, I thought it was one of Ben's just most dominant games. Short of, as a team, we fell into like a two-minute meltdown at the end of the third period that they went on that run and kind of sat in the zone, and we didn't handle that well. But short of that particular phase of the game, I thought Ben was exceptional.
Well, he dropped in 31 points. You want to look at efficiency, Bogus. He dropped in 31 points, 11 of 13 from the floor, 9 of 11 from the free throw line. I mean, we've seen guys go for 30-plus points in the NBA, and they take 25 to 28 shots.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not being efficient. Being efficient in the NBA is dropping in 31, taking 13 shots.
And he did exactly what he's supposed to be doing against the way teams defend him. The Nets played a lot of zone last night. They were giving him 18 feet to shoot jumpers. And the problem is, you give him all that space to shoot a jumper, and now you're backpedaling, and he's coming downhill at you full speed at 6'7", with those long arms, and then he's unstoppable. I mean, all these shots at the rim last night, that's the way he has to play until, presumably at some point, he has a jump shot.
Well, and that's the thing that the Brooklyn Nets aren't going to be able to force him to do that, but there will be a team, as you saw last year against the Boston Celtics. I mean, there's going to be a series where a team's basically going to shut the lane off, not going to enable him to, he might get some of the back-to-the-basket stuff, but it's going to try and not enable him to get to the rim, Bogus, and he's going to have to hit some shots from the outside. And that's a concern here for Ben Simmons. He was great last night, but that poster, what was put out there, is true. I mean, he cannot consistently knock down an outside jumper, which is remarkable for a player that's been able to get to this stage, be as big of a superstar as he is in the NBA, that he can't shoot.
Yeah.
I mean, he literally cannot shoot the basketball from the outside and turns down wide-open jumpers.
And he's a pretty amazing player as is. If he even had that jumper be average, just think of how more impactful he would be in this league night to night. If that was at least a good enough weapon that you had to respect it, that you had to keep you honest on defense.
Here is Ben Simmons say, don't listen to the reports on partying. He's focused on hoops.
I try not to pay too much attention to, you know, what's going on social media and what people are saying, just because people are going to say what they want to say. And I can't let that affect me on the floor. So I just try and do my job and step on the floor and run the point guard position
yeah.
as best I can. So that's all I got for you.
Yeah, that's all he's got for it. Yeah, well, I mean, listen, and I would say this, that would motivate me. Would it not motivate you? People talking smack, you hop on social media and they're pointing out what you can't. Wouldn't that motivate you on a night in, night out basis? Because you can take it one of two ways. Either you can go into a shell and basically think the world hates you and step onto the court and feel like everyone's analyzing you left and right, or would you be the person where it brings motivation to you and you play with that anger and that chip on your shoulder?
No, I would be the person that I couldn't be on social media because it would crush me mentally.
So you'd step on the court already a beaten man?
100%. Or I'd have to not let myself see it and know it and read about it, and none of my buddies could tell me about it. I couldn't, you know, Richard Jefferson was taking shots at him coming to Jared Dudley's defense. No one could be telling me about that. Straight focus.
But you know, everyone's got that friend that's going to tell you.
RJ said,
"Hey, did you see this? Hey, I don't know. Did you take notice of that?" Everybody's got that friend that just, and they're like, "What? What? I didn't mean anything." And they just tell you something out of the blue. I don't know. I'd be the guy that I'd try and be motivated, but I get it. I mean, if it's overwhelming negativity, like, I don't know if I could be Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds actually thrived on being despised and being hated, right? He actually used it as motivation, fuel. And like, everybody outside the greater San Francisco area just despised Barry Bonds. And he stepped up to the plate, and I get he was on performance-enhancing drugs, but the point being is that he thrived on it and motivated him. I don't know if I could be that, but if I'm getting picked apart based on my social life, partying, whether I can't shoot, if I'm Ben Simmons, I'm taking that and using that as kind of the gasoline to my engine.
Yeah, some of these guys, they're just crazy. I mean, I don't think you can be that good on such an elite level without being a little off, because you have to be selfish and tunnel vision. And, you know, the stories of Michael Jordan just manufacturing things that made him angry, so he would play off of that.
Well, you look at a columnist like the Charlotte Observer.
Right.
Who, like, said one line criticizing his game, and he basically, he'd take that one line, and that would he'd use that to motivate him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Russell Westbrook hasn't talked to a guy in Oklahoma City. He just, next question for at least this season, if not going back to last year, just to, you know, to make up or to overblow conflicts and reasons to be pissed off and then go play games. It's not the way my mind works. And on a side note, I don't know if we have the linguistics department up and running this morning or our investigative reporting team. I need to know how Ben Simmons sometimes has an accent and sometimes doesn't. Have you noticed that?
I do notice that,
like,
yes.
He just sounded like he was from Jersey just talking then, and other times you can tell he's from Australia.
Yeah, it's
true. I forget sometimes
that
he's not American.
No, I know. It does go in and out. That's fair. But there.
Which is real.
It did not sound like he was from Australia.
No.
Well, it was like when Madonna lived in Britain for all those years, and all of a sudden she had a British accent.
I guess.
In some interviews, and then in other interviews she didn't, right?
And
it's kind of like that.
But at least to me, that's the direction you want to go in. Like, I wish I had an English accent. I wish I had an Australian accent. If I had an Australian accent, I'd want to keep it as long as I possibly could. And I'd over, like, now if it's fading because I'm here for a long time.
What, you just hang out at Australian bars in Philadelphia?
If I'm Ben Simmons and I come to this country and I'm here for so long, and then between regular conversation, TV, whatever it is, and apparently my accent starts to fade, I'm freaking out. That's one of my best qualities.
Well, I get it, but it's like, when I was up at school at Syracuse, I roomed with a lot of guys from Boston, right? Like Shrewsbury, Massachusetts, and everything like that. So to the point where I came home during winter break one time and I started using Wicked.
Oh, I see, but all right.
And I started using some of the vernacular that they use a lot. Because I was hanging out. I didn't have the Boston accent, but there were certain words that I would throw in. My sister would be like, "Wicked. What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah.
My wife went to BU. There's a couple of Boston ones. Like, what do they call them? Packies? Instead of like a 7-Eleven, like a convenience store, is called a Packy. And then they call water fountains bubblers up there, too. And it's not that far away from here.
No, it is not.
They've got a lot of different words.
Here's good job by Bisseglia. Here's Ben Simmons on 60 Minutes talking about his accent.
It's mixed. Just being in the States for so long, you know, I'll be on the floor and try and say something with an Australian accent, and guys, like, looking at me funny. So I try and, you know, say it the way an American player would say it, which is a lot easier. But it's just mixed. It depends. You know, as soon as I go back home and I'm with my friends, it comes out a lot.
See, like, there I can hear it a little bit. Like, it's almost like he's fighting
it
off.
Play it again. I can't hear it. Let's play it again.
It's mixed. just being in the States for so long.
Right there.
You know, I'll be on the floor and try and say something with an Australian accent, and guys, like, looking at me funny. So I try and, you know, say it the way an American player would say it, which is a lot easier. But it's just mixed. It depends. You know, as soon as I go back home and I'm with my friends, it comes out a lot.
So Ben Simmons, when he goes onto the court, not only has to focus on trying to hit an outside jumper, but he's trying to be focused on eliminating his Australian accent when he's speaking to American players.
See, now I have new questions.
It's all a fake.
It's an Australian accent, but I mean, it's not that confusing, is it, that he needs to speak American?
Well, I guess
to
there's some verbiage and vernacular that maybe he says in Australia to Australian players that they'd understand that American players would raise an eyebrow to.
I mean,
that would be the only way I would take it. If you're Patty Mills, I mean, Patty Mills is Australian. He's speaking, you know, he still
sounds as Australian.
And he's got a very, very thick accent.
Right.
I would imagine players are not looking.
I've never seen Manu shrugging at him. Well, like, I don't know what he's
saying. Right. Tim Duncan during the heyday, Tim Duncan's like, what are you talking about? Speak English. You know,
he's not the Tasmanian devil.
Right. And no, I agree. Well, listen, teach his own. But I'll tell you.
Best I can, so.
Yeah.
That's all I got for you.
Yeah, thanks, the bear man. Got poked last night, and the bear poked back to the chagrin of Biseglia, who looks like a beaten man. Basically, I walked in today. He had his head on the desk. I'm like, what is wrong? He's like, I played basketball last night. My back is killing me. You're 35 years of age. You're in peak physical condition.
Oh, not at all. Back.
You're over the cellulosis?
Yeah, that's gone. That's good. So that's I'm gone. Back on the
no
court.
No gout, no cellulosis.
I'm all healthy.
You're all
minus
healthy.
The back.
Right, minus the back. Who I was saying, well, what are you doing last night? And then Zach Martin said, what? Basketball. What are you playing with other 40-year-olds? And Biseglia then proceeded to go on a 3-minute, 4-minute conversation describing how competitive this league is.
Yeah,
and then Zach basically walked away like, I really don't care.
Yeah, my game plan with Zach is I'm going to treat Zach like Zach treats others, and it worked.
Yes, it did. That was a good game plan. So the Philadelphia 76ers with the stylish win last night lead that series 2-1. We'll get into the Spurs and Nuggets, and San Antonio has been the better team overall, if not for Jamal Murray, fourth quarter, dropping in 21 for Denver, game 2. San Antonio easily could be up 3-0 as a 7 seed going up against the Denver Nuggets. We'll get into that. They won last night, as did the Golden State Warriors. If you're worried about Golden State against the Clippers, no need to worry any longer. It's Taz of the Moose, Bogish in the house here on this Friday morning. Take it right up until 9, CBS Sports Radio.
Listen to CBS Sports Radio with the Radio.com app. Free and available in the Google Play and iTunes App Store. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. Listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
That's right. On a Friday morning, Taz and the Moose. Taz is off. He's sick. He's a little under the weather. Hopefully he's feeling better by Monday. Bogus steps in, slides in, co-hosting with me right up until 9 a.m. Eastern time. We got the conversation going with the 76ers performance in Brooklyn last night. The 16-point victory over the Brooklyn Nets. Bogus has got more info for you. Double duty this morning for him. And he's got an update. What's going on, Bo?
Moose, it's all sponsored by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Not Patrick Beverley, not any other Clipper could stop Kevin Durant last night in L.A.
Durant guarded by Gilgeous Alexander. Waits, drives to the right. Pull up, jumper over a double team. Nothing but net. Durant is 6-6. It's 48-32.
Tim Roy, Warriors Radio. Durant and his Dubs rolled from the opening tip, finishing with a 132-105 win and a 2-1 series lead. Durant finished with 38 points. Ben Simmons put up 31, 29 from Tobias Harris, as the Sixers won Game 3 in Brooklyn without Joel Embiid and his sore left knee, 131-115. And the Spurs handled the Nuggets in San Antonio, 118-108. Derek White scored a career-high 36. The Spurs and Sixers have 2-1 leads as well. Another trio of Game 3s tonight, Raptors Magic, Celtics Pacers, Blazers Thunder. Toronto and Orlando split their first two. Boston and Portland lead 2-0. Playoff hockey, the Jets and Blues back in Winnipeg for Game 5, tied at 2. The Jets led 2-0 entering the third period.
Blues continue the battle. Another 20 seconds to go. It's lost along the wing. Grabbed by Bozak. He centers. They score! Jaden Schwartz has put the The Blues on top, 3-2. 15 seconds to go in regulation.
Chris Kerber, Blues Radio. Jaden Schwartz, the game winner. St. Louis winning 3-2 for a 3-2 series lead.
That's a disaster for Winnipeg.
The home team has not won a game in this series yet.
And that'll change in game six.
You think it's
done? I think the Blues will close them out in game six.
The Jets. And
at some point in time, a home team is going to win one of these games.
You'd think.
I mean, to have a 2-0 lead going into the third.
And they scored 12 seconds into the game.
Right. They scored 12 seconds in the game. But have a 2-0 lead, you give up three unanswered goals in the third period, and you give up one with 15 seconds left in regulation at the 1945 mark to lose it. I mean, that's a crushing blow for Winnipeg. And you look at two teams that the St. Louis Blues were, I mean, arguably the hottest team in the NHL going into the postseason. I think their mark was 30-5 in their last 35 games in the regular season. And they've got Bennington, who's been unbelievable as a rookie netminder. And you look at Winnipeg, who got off to that great start, strengthened themselves at the NHL trade deadline, added Kevin Hayes from the New York Rangers. And, you know, they kind of played decidedly average hockey down the stretch. Line A's an unbelievable power forward, the Finnish player, the former number two overall pick. But, I mean, I would think at some point in time a home team's going to win one of these games. If they didn't win last night, 2-0 lead at home going into the third, blow that game, going back to St. Louis, I mean, that place is going to be rocking game six.
The Sharks won at home, forcing a game six, 5-2 last night over the Golden Knights. And the Hurricanes win at home. They topped the Capitals 2-1. That series is 2-2. Away from the playoffs, the Red Wings reportedly hiring their former player, their former captain, Steve Yzerman, as general manager. Ken Holland will remain as senior VP. The NFLPA released a statement yesterday to remind everyone that the voluntary offseason workouts means not mandatory. Jags exec Tom Coughlin, critical of his players, some of them, for not attending these voluntary workouts this week. Now, Moose's team is the latest to dip its toe in the AAF waters, Washington adding former Salt Lake City QB Josh Woodrum yesterday.
Of course.
And Browns GM John...
They did it.
Might as well, right?
Wow, listen, why not? Beggars can't be choosers.
Someone's got to sign Josh Woodrum.
Well, that's exactly right. The Redskins. I mean, I walk outside and Zach Martin sarcastically says to me, Redskins are going to be good this year. Not at football. What? Being an embarrassment? Yeah, they do that every single year. But yes, I'm glad for him. Good.
Sure.
Hopefully he's the third string quarterback. If he's the starter, the Redskins are going to be in a world of hurt.
Yeah, he threw more picks than touchdowns.
That's a problem.
In the AAF. So
which is an issue.
You may want him off the roster by week one.
I would agree with
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Baseball last night, the Mariners ended their six-game skid 11-10 over the Angels. They needed Jay Bruce's RBI single in the ninth because they blew a 10-2 lead. The O's cooled off the Rays 6-5-11, and the Dodgers won in Milwaukee 3-1, homers from Cody Bellinger and Max Muncy. And St. John's basketball reportedly finalizing the hire of former Arkansas head coach Mike Anderson to replace Chris Mullen. Congrats on that. He's like choice 8.
Well, that is a strange hire.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, and Bogus, you know college basketball as good as anybody. I mean, that is a strange hire. I'm not telling you that Mike Anderson at 59 years of age can't coach. It's not like you're bringing in a guy that doesn't have experience. UAB, it was a former assistant on Nolan Richardson's staff at Arkansas. The 40 minutes of hell, Clint McDaniel, Corey Beck, you know, those, and went to UAB, was very
Scotty
successful
Thurman?
There.
Is that, was
Scotty
that his name?
Thurman, yeah.
Okay.
Scotty Thurman hit
Corliss.
The number 30, Corliss Williamson, right. I mean, about Alex Dillard, remember him? The number 3, could shoot the ball from the outside. So he was on Richardson's staff at Arkansas, went to UAB, was successful there. Went from UAB to Missouri, was successful there. Went from Missouri back to Arkansas, you know, and did make the NCAA tournament with the Arkansas Razorbacks two previous years. This year, I think the team finished up, 13-16? Maybe they were under 500. And then gets fired at Arkansas. Now, you mean to tell me a guy with no Northeast roots, no Northeast roots whatsoever, 59 years of age, after Porter Moser turns you down, after you embarrass yourself in terms of wanting Bobby Hurley initially from Arizona State, and then not offering Bobby Hurley more money. It's just like UCLA going to John Calipari. you know, we'll give you, we'll pay you, give you a 6-year, $48 million deal. We'll pay you $8 million a year. He's making 9.25 at Kentucky. Why would a guy leave Kentucky to go to UCLA to make less money?
And don't forget too that UCLA wouldn't pay Rick Barnes' buyout.
Right.
Or he would. They would have had Rick Barnes
and
as
Rick
well.
Rick Barnes, right? Instead, they end up, and Mick Cronin can coach. But if you think about UCLA basketball, the last thing you're thinking about is Mick Cronin being your head coach. They don't offer Hurley a raise to leave Arizona State. He says thanks, but no thanks. I think gets a brand spanking new contract from Arizona State. They come out with that announcement. So Hurley remains in the Pac-12. Porter Moser turns him down. You have Rapoli, a big booster, former St. John's alum, hopping on WFAN in New York, basically lambasting the entire program, the president to the VP to the athletic, not even the athletic director, but everyone else in the coaching search, and you end up with Mike Anderson?
Yeah, and what I don't... and
Mike Anderson?
And Mike Anderson gets the job, apparently. The dude at Oklahoma State was involved, too. I think his name is Mike Boynton.
Yes.
And again, a guy that, I, as far as I know, has no New York connections.
No.
I always thought they should have hired Tim Clues from Iona, but apparently he's got a $4 million buyout there.
Right.
And they wouldn't, and they couldn't or wouldn't pay that.
Mullen about $2.7 million to go away.
Right. They talked to James Jones from Yale, who at least, you know, is from around here. But the oddity was, like, he's only been a head coach in the Ivy League. He's never actually had to recruit a scholarship athlete, which I don't know if that would have been a big deal. But, you know, the no roots thing is big to me. And it may be completely overblown. But I'm sitting here talking to you in my Fordham hoodie pullover thing. And our current men's basketball coach, and a man named Jeff Neubauer, is a good coach, a good X's and O's coach. But he has took this job from Eastern Kentucky and has no New York connections, and it's been an issue.
It's a problem
recruiting around here because he doesn't. You don't know anyone. You don't know who's who and who's where and where to look and how to go. And you know you can hire somebody to come in and help you and basically recruit for you, which I'm assuming was what Mike Anderson would do. But it just puts you in a weird spot when you hire a guy from like outside your geographic footprint, especially in an area like New York City.
Right, unless he's a national name. Right?
Right,
unless he's a guy that you know that is a brand amongst himself, he steps in and guys know and have instant respect. And not taking anything away from Anderson. We're not telling you he can't coach. He can. It's not being critical. It's just a matter of it's kind of square peg round hole. It's just a very very strange hire because of everything that Andrew just mentioned. Because you step into this marketplace into New York City. You have to have an understanding, a distinct understanding of the five boroughs, distinct understanding, even though may would say that they're not New York City's not producing the same basketball player once did based on AAUs and guys leaving for prep schools. But this is still a rich area for college basketball players. And you have to know the scene and have an understanding of guys that would be willing to stay. So you're not chasing your tail. You know, you don't want to be going after and trying to pursue a guy that has no interest in staying locally, that wants to go play in the SEC or go play in the ACC or go play in the Pac-12, whatever it might be. You have to have an understanding of guys that are willing to buy in to play at St. John's, what's going to make your program good. And having those connections that are having coaches help work for you.
And just like UCLA, it doesn't help either that this guy who doesn't come from your area is also not your first choice.
No.
Which is going to be held against them. And now everybody knows your dirty laundry. Everybody knows that both of these schools are cheap. And there's some infighting, especially at St. John's, where you know the AD wanted to go one way, the president wanted to go the other. Now everybody knows about that too. So you know if you're a kid and maybe you like Mike Anderson, but you're like, are you signing up to go to these programs that aren't run well? And maybe in 18 months are changing their mind about the guy they just hired that's recruiting you right now.
Well, if we put ourselves in the mindset of a 17, 18 year old kid, right? That all right, still the one and run done rule is still in play, right? So either A, I'm going to a place where I want to play big-time college basketball for 1 year before I turn pro, where I'm projected to be, unless things go completely awry, a top-5 pick or a top-10 pick, a lottery selection, what have you. You know, St. John's is never in the mix, right? I mean, I'm probably going to go to a Duke or North Carolina, Kentucky, or one of those type of programs. St. John's is not going to be in the mix. So then, you know, if I'm 17, 18 years of age, what do you want to do? All right, there might be the kids that want to stay locally, play in front of their family. That might be a thing. But then you're also talking about the system. Does it play into the system? Do you believe in the coach? Do you believe your game is getting better? I mean, those are all the things. But ultimately, you know, even though you might not be projected to be a lottery pick, Bogus, every guy that steps on the court, for the most part, has dreams and aspirations of maybe one day being Ja Morant, who comes out of nowhere,
right,
and all of a sudden is a top three NBA pick and develops and gets better and all is the talk of college basketball. Everybody dreams about that. Is Mike Anderson going to be the guy that you're running to help develop you at St. John's in Queens, New York? I don't know if that's the guy.
And you know what? He might be. He may prove us all wrong. But
maybe.
But it's a big, big hole that you're starting this job in. If you're any of these guys now, because you're clearly not the first choice, and now all of a sudden there are outsiders kind of thrown in the mix here too, so it's just a lot to work off of. Plus, it's also April 19th already, and there's already been a lot of movement, and there's a lot of transfers out there. It's over 600, the list. But, I mean, you're also getting somewhat of a late start in your brand new area, building a staff and finding kids to play for you, because, by the way, anyone of significance has left St. John's since the end of the season, either for the NBA or for a different school.
Right, and that's a problem. And he's going to have to hire strong New York assistants that not only are guys are going to be able to help emphasize his system, but also have an understanding of clearly what players and where to find the players to help feed that system and help St. John's turn around. And here's the other thing. You mentioned it. I mean, the coaching search, if it did become a national embarrassment, where you had Rapoli hopping on WFAN in New York, and then you listen to the names that are getting thrown out there. I mean, once you don't land Bobby Hurley, who's got tri-state area ties, and he decides to stay at Arizona State because he got cheap and you didn't want to buy the buyout and then offer more money than he's making Arizona State. Porter Moser, who's got, I think, three or four kids that are all in, they're all teenagers, right? And then, you know, that's the offer from Loyola Chicago. He doesn't have any Northeast ties. Then it ends up being Mike Anderson, the former Arkansas coach. But you mentioned it. I would have been fine with James Jones, 55 years of age, from Yale. The other guy that got thrown into the mix late was Paul Hewitt.
Yeah, who's not even working. Yeah.
Paul Hewitt.
And the dude,
I mean, you're going to bring Paul Hewitt aboard? I mean, it was a disaster at Georgia Tech.
Right. And he didn't get that. I'm trying to remember. He was
a commodity a decade ago.
Right, and they wanted him, or he wanted them, and there was a previous opening at St. John's that he was connected for.
Correct. I think it was 4 years ago.
And I can't remember how that didn't end up with him getting hired. But
what they should have done was 4 years ago, they should never have hired Mullen, and they should have hired Danny Hurley, who's now the UConn coach.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the route they should have went at that time, whether it be money or whether it be his uneasiness with the AD and president at the time. You know, there's a number of reports about why that did not happen, but that should have been the hire 4 years ago. Then they wouldn't be in this mess. I'm not telling you Danny Hurley would have been the God's gift to St. John's basketball, but they wouldn't be in this mess. Now it's a complete utter mess because now you're bringing in a guy where St. John's fans and you're going to look at that and say it's a strange hire, it's not a sexy hire, and it's not like St. John's fans are looking at it and saying, wow, we got Mike Anderson to coach our program.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, this is probably more true for UCLA. It's just insane that those are jobs that people should be running to, that you're beating guys away from this opening.
That's a problem.
They're staying outside your door demanding you give them this job. And UCLA, Calipari wasn't real. Rick Barnes was real. I mean, that was Rick Barnes. I had heard what Rick Barnes admitted before he admitted it, that he was taking that job.
Yeah.
And I forget what the overall buyout was, but they wanted him.
I think it was between $4 or $5 million. Right,
yeah, I think it was five, and they wanted him to cover two. And he was like, no, of course not. You're UCLA. If you want me, this is what it takes. Pay it. And good for him to put his foot down and say no. But if you're like UCLA in that position, A, to even think about telling Rick Barnes to cover it.
Yeah.
I mean, it shouldn't be like this, and I'm surprised that it was a two pretty substantial jobs.
No, and Tennessee, you must be fired up too. You got a coach who basically has come out and said, well, if you took care of my buyout, I'd be at UCLA.
I mean, even Tim Clues yesterday, his statement where he took himself out of consideration, even though he clearly wasn't in consideration since they kept looking other places, was like, I really wanted this job, but I wasn't going to get it, so here I am, Iona.
Yeah, and it's not like Clues is all in terms of the area. It's not like he's living in New Rochelle, which is a suburb of New York City.
He's living in another suburb.
He's living in Long Island.
Yeah, he lives by me.
Right.
He basically commutes. High school games, yeah.
He commutes every day to go coach at Iona, and he's a really good college coach, and good for him. instead of getting, you know, he basically says thanks but no thanks because he knows he's not getting the job. So if he felt like he had a shot, he would never have said that. He knows he's not getting the job. And at that stage, how many times can he be embarrassed by St. John's before saying thanks but no thanks? I'm moving on. Back to his home in Long Island, which would have been a shorter commute to St. John's. We'll come back. Kevin Durant playing like KD last night in L.A. We'll get into that next. It's Taz Moose. Bogus is in the house. CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes. Could save 15% or more on car insurance. Time right now to ask the pros, where you, the listener, get to ask us a question, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Submit your question. Be listening later on the show. We might answer your question. Trust the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts to help you choose the brakes that are exact fit for your vehicle with brands you trust like Brake Best, Brake Best Select, Wagner, Thermo Quiet. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every single day. Coming up a little bit later on in the program, and we've got a really good show on tap for you. We're going to be welcoming aboard Michael Bent, who's going to join Andrew and myself in studio, former boxer, actor. He's got a Netflix docuseries out called A Loser. He's going to join us in studio about 30-plus minutes from now. He's got an interesting story, and we're also going to be joined at the top of the third and final hour by Tony Dungy, Super Bowl-winning head coach, author. He's got a new book out, and Tony will join Bogus and myself. We'll talk a little bit about the book and also run around the National Football League with Tony. So look forward to that conversation. We've chatted a lot about the NBA here, hour number one. And if you were concerned about the Golden State Warriors blowing a 31-point lead in game two, Clippers having the greatest comeback in the history of the NBA playoffs, well, in game three, without DeMarcus Cousins, who's done in all likelihood done for the year with that torn quad, Bogus, you saw an eruption in Los Angeles last night for the Golden State Warriors as they got back to playing, you know, Warrior basketball pre DeMarcus Cousins, where Durant played brilliantly. Draymond Green almost had a triple double. Their stars were aligned. They got back to playing the style and fashion. Bogut played 20 plus minutes, gave you 8 points. Workmanlike play at center position. They don't need all that much as long as those four are doing their job. And they did their work last night.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's kind of like the Sixers, right? I mean, all year long, as the Warriors are starting and stopping and struggling and not struggling, I just kind of always assume that once we got to here, they'd be fine because it's just 82 games is a lot for a team that's won titles and been to the finals over and over and over again. I mean, it's a long, long haul. And then they get in and they take game one, and then just game two collapse happens. And you're like, well, okay, maybe things are not settled. But then they go out last night, and Durant in particular does that without Cousins. It seems almost like an unfair conversation because personally, you know, as Steve Kerr said, you just feel terrible for Cousins. He has one significant injury, comes back. He's in this perfect situation. He's healthy. He's mainly contributing. There are valid questions about how they play with him on the floor and not on the floor.
Yeah.
And then this crazy injury happens. And last night they go back to being kind of free-flying Warriors as if they are actually better without him. But last night they were fine without him. And Durant in particular was special last night.
Well, and the only thing about with Durant is, and he's played with this chip on his shoulder all season long.
Yeah.
You know, picking up yet another technical, getting his third technical, which is a concern here moving forward.
Seven's the number in the playoffs.
Right.
And there is, I mean, not to get too far down this rabbit hole, I heard Steve Kerr talking about this. There is somewhat of maybe a conversation to have about that rule because that number doesn't change no matter how long you play. So, like, you get seven, whether it's in one round or four rounds, and you're missing a game. Maybe somewhere along the way there it resets, and he wants last night's to be rescinded. I know the NBA reviews every single one, and maybe they will do that. But, yeah, I mean, there is an annoyance in Kevin Durant that sometimes gets the better of him.
Well, it does, and he's got to maintain focus. I'm not telling you that number is going to come into play, but when you've got three technicals, you're on three already, and we're sitting here, and it's game three of the NBA postseason for them, and they're looking to win an NBA championship. It's a lot. We'll get into a little NFL. Love fest for Eli. Josh Rosen, he's still in Arizona. We'll get into that next. Taz Moose, Bogus in the house, CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.